So America, let us fight for this beautiful country we love. And in 7 days, we have the power, each of you has the power to turn the page and start writing the next chapter in the most extraordinary story ever told.
We're a dumping ground. We're like a garbage can for the world.
So that's about it, ain't it? There's your choice.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Why?
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Olé.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet, on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us for another love fest that we call the Bradcast. Glad to have you all here. Glad to have Desi Doyen here. Hello, Desiree.
Hello.
We've got two guests standing by that I will get to momentarily, so allow me to begin here. On Tuesday night, Vice President Kamala Harris sought to remind Americans what life was like under the chaotic and ultimately extraordinarily deadly presidency of Donald Trump, while offering voters a different path forward if they send her to the White House in a speech billed as her campaign's closing argument. Quote, "I will always listen to you, even if you don't vote for me," she promised, speaking before a massive crowd said by the Harris campaign to have been at least 75,000 strong, one that spilled from the grassy ellipse near the White House all the way back to the Washington Monument in D.C. In the shadow of the White House, just 7 days before the final votes of the 2024 election are cast, Harris vowed to put country over party and warned that Donald Trump is obsessed with little more than revenge and his own personal interests. She compared Trump to King George, who American revolutionaries sought to free themselves from about 250 years ago, describing the king as a, quote, petty tyrant, and Trump as, quote, another petty tyrant, and a, quote, wannabe dictator who ruled by, quote, chaos and division. She urged voters to reject Trump's efforts to sow division and fear, declaring, quote, "This is not who we are." Less than 48 hours earlier, inside Madison Square Garden in New York City, for his part, Trump called his Democratic opponent, quote, "a train wreck who has destroyed everything in her path." His allies on stage labeled Puerto Rico a, quote, "floating island of garbage," and said that Harris, who would be the first woman to be president, had begun her career as a prostitute. Trump took the stage on Sunday night at the Garden to deliver his campaign's closing argument after several of his allies used crude and racist insults toward Vice President Harris and other critics of the disgraced former president and 34-time convicted criminal felon. As AP characterized it, two nights and 200 miles apart, the dueling closing arguments outlined in stark terms the choice that U.S. voters face on November 5, when they will weigh two very different visions of leadership and America's future. Trump's raucous rally, marked by crude, racist, and misogynistic insults, highlighted the uglier elements of his coalition. Even the locations of the two rallies told a story. Trump chose to deliver his closing message in his old hometown at a sports arena that was once the scene of an infamous 1939 Nazi rally. Harris chose a more formal setting, the Ellipse near the White House, to underscore the seriousness of this moment in American history and the threat that Trump poses to democracy on the very same spot that the former president addressed thousands of his loyalists on January 6, 2021, before directing them toward the U.S. Capitol, which they stormed in an attempt to overthrow the U.S. government and prevent the peaceful transfer of power for the first time in the nation's history. But more than simply reminding voters of the danger that Trump poses to U.S. democracy, Harris's remarks were designed to highlight her opponent's record of prioritizing his personal interests over those of the nation.
America, we know what Donald Trump has in mind. More chaos, more division, and policies that help those at the very top and hurt everyone else. I offer a different path, and I ask for your vote. And here is my pledge to you. I pledge to seek common ground and common sense solutions to make your life better. I am not looking to score political points. I am looking to make progress. And to people who disagree with me, unlike Donald Trump, I don't believe people who disagree with me are the enemy. He wants to put them in jail. I'll give them a seat at the table. And I pledge to be a president for all Americans. And to always put country above party and self.
For his part, at the center of his closing argument 2 days earlier, Trump vowed to stage the largest deportation operation in U.S. history and to impose broad tariffs, which economists describe as a new nationwide sales tax on the American people, in order to generate revenue and boost American manufacturing. Facing criticism from even some Republicans on Tuesday, Trump called his Madison Square Garden event, quote, a love fest, and did not address the comments of a pro-Trump comedian who opened the event, calling Puerto Rico a, quote, floating island of garbage, along with other racist, demeaning jokes about black people, other Latinos, Palestinians, and Jews in his routine before Trump took the stage. Quote, nobody's ever had love like that, Trump said of the hours-long Sunday event featuring his family members, his surrogates like billionaire Elon Musk, TV psychologist Dr. Phil, 1980s pro wrestling icon Hulk Hogan, and fired Fox News host Tucker Carlson, among a bunch of other people that many had never heard of, who, you know, called Hillary Clinton. Yes, they're still choking that chicken. They called her a, quote, bastard and, quote, real son of a bitch, and described Vice President Harris as the Antichrist and other such pleasantries. Said Trump on Tuesday, quote, it was really love for our country. Harris, meanwhile, described many of her detailed plans to grow the economy, to improve health care for Americans, and restore reproductive rights taken away from women by Trump's corrupted far-right U.S. Supreme Court majority. She pledged unity on Tuesday night, but also cast Trump as someone driven more by revenge and grievance than a commitment to the people. saying, quote, this is someone who is unstable, obsessed with revenge, consumed with grievance, and out for unchecked power. She said, this is not a candidate for president who is thinking about how to make your life better. She spoke directly to Republican voters at times and promised to listen to those who did not vote for her if she was elected, vowing to represent a new generation of American leadership after so many years of division since the rise of Donald Trump.
America, for too long, we have been consumed with too much division, chaos, and mutual distrust. And it can be easy then to forget a simple truth. It doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to be this way. It is time to stop pointing fingers. We have to stop pointing fingers and start locking arms. It is time to turn the page on the drama and the conflict, the fear and division. It is time for a new generation of leadership in America. And I am ready to offer that leadership as the next president of the United States of America.
Heading into her speech, according to AP, Harris's campaign was aware of criticism from her party's farthest left base that she's been too focused on courting moderate Republican voters. They urged Harris to focus more on working class priorities than the threat that Trump poses to U.S. democracy. Ultimately, her speech was designed to tie both issues together. She warned of Trump threatening democratic norms and vowed to take action to curb corporate price gouging that has caused high grocery prices, help first-time home buyers with down payments, expand Medicare to cover the cost of home health care for the elderly and others, and to cut taxes for the middle class. And yet, even with two starkly different futures on tap, clearly drawn out over the past several days, if not several weeks, Americans remain on edge as the two candidates, if you believe the pre-election polling averages from all of the major outlets, appear to still be deadlocked, particularly in the seven critical battleground states that most believe are likely to determine the results of this election. As a social media post that's been making the rounds in recent days quips, on November 5, it'll be as if the whole world is waiting for the results of a biopsy to come back. Sounds about right. Joining us now for what will almost certainly be the last time before Election Day. It remains unclear when exactly the results of that biopsy will actually come in, however, are our two OG blogging friends who have been doing a lot of heavy lifting for us on the broadcast throughout this long, strange campaign season, in at least trying to help us all make sense of it. Heather Digby Parton is the blogger and award-winning columnist, often known as simply Digby, at both Salon, where she is a longtime contributor, and at her own long-running blog, Digby's Hullabaloo. And, of course, the man known as simply Driftglass, though occasionally as Bill or Mr. Electrico on Twitter. He is both a longtime liberal blogger and co-host with wife Fran, or Blue Gal, of the Professional Left podcast, produced weekly from their home in what they describe as flyover country, Illinois. Welcome back to both of you guys. Most of the conversation today, I think, is going to focus on what I've been describing as phase one of this election. That would be everything up to basically the close of polls on Election Day, with phase two even murkier still thereafter, as it will largely depend on who is announced the winner after phase one, I guess, and what the losing party and their supporters do about that. But focusing for now just on phase one, let me start with you, Heather. The respective campaigns and so forth in broad strokes. How did Kamala Harris do on Tuesday night in that closing argument at the Ellipse? And I guess your thoughts on Trump's own closing message on Sunday at the Garden.
Well, I think you laid it out very well. The contrast was obvious between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Trump's rally fascist Madison Square Garden rally. Hate fest is what it actually was, not a love fest. And the fact that he even said that is just hilarious. But, they made it clear what they were doing on Sunday at Madison Square Garden. They were trying to gather the faithful. And the way they gather the faithful is by, is through hatred, bigotry, racism, xenophobia, homophobia, all of it. And they put people up there that were going to carry that message. And it's very obvious that that is exactly what they intended to do. This wasn't an accident. This is something that they did on purpose. And, that sort of tells you where they're at in their game. What they want to do is reach what they say is their, low propensity voters. Now, I don't know how this does that, but I think they are focusing on a bunch of, on this bro vote, these men who basically, listen to Joe Rogan and, are playing video games and basically don't pay attention to politics, but they really, find that kind of stuff funny. Mm. And that was what they were going for. And, I think it was a big mistake, because what they did do that was very clear was they offended a constituency that they were counting on. Mm. And specifically, they were counting on in Pennsylvania, and that is the Puerto Rican vote. Mm-hmm. And they did something that was extremely stupid. They got the celebrities that those low propensity voters and others in the Puerto Rican community actually do listen to. People like Bad Bunny, Jennifer Lopez, Ricky Martin, Mark Anthony, all of those people. And they got, and there's a whole bunch more too, by the way, that have come since that day. Mm-hmm. Right in the middle of their rally, they all came forward and endorsed Kamala Harris.
Which is
based upon.
Well, I was going to say it was interesting. They endorsed Kamala Harris based upon those comments at Madison Square Garden. But it was interesting because up till you got to Puerto Rico, you were describing as much as hate-filled as it was and so forth. But what sounded like a successful rally, that they were doing what they meant to do.
I think so. I mean, I think that this was what they intended to do. Interestingly enough, though, they made two mistakes. It wasn't just this Puerto Rican constituency, which is huge, by the way. I mean, it's a massive, sub demographic in mm-hmm. Pennsylvania, which is the state, the state where Elon Musk is camped out right now, uh-huh. trying to get votes. It's enough people there that it could absolutely turn the election. 1 or 2% would be all that was taking. And everything that we're hearing is that they are outraged by what was said there about their island and just the kind of, grotesque depiction of them as, being the kind of people that they were depicting them. And here's the other thing, though. Yeah. There's another aspect to this, which is that what they were also doing by having all these other people say these awful, ugly things, uh-huh. Donald Trump gets a pass on that stuff. Everybody uh-huh. assumes he's just kidding, right? Or he's just, whatever, that's old Trump, he is. This wasn't him saying this stuff.
Right.
This was all the people he lined up at his rally. Now, that has an effect. People are going, wait a minute, this is the whole thing. This is the campaign. So they made a mistake there. Their closing argument, I think, was a failure. They thought it was going to be a success. In their own terms, it was going to be a success, and it was. But they were wrong. They made a bad judgment on who they put on that stage before Donald Trump came up there and the message that they gave out.
And before I get to Driftglass, was Kamala Harris's speech at the Ellipse, was that a success or more successful as you see it?
She got 75,000 people and filled up that place, more people than Trump had at his big rally that, bigger than anybody's ever seen before, ever in history. She got more people than that, and she gave an excellent speech that was aimed at everybody in the country. It was like the polar opposite of what Trump did. It was exactly designed to sort of reassure people like, hey, I'm a normal person here. She didn't have a bunch of idiots running up and saying a bunch of stuff. She just came out by herself, gave this speech, said, this is what I'm about. I'm inclusive. I'm adding, everybody's in the mix here. Everyone will have a seat at my table, she said. And that's what that is what her campaign is trying to do here in these last days, which is focus on getting people who may be nervous and maybe thinking that she's going to be too liberal or whatever. Some of those Republican suburban women, et cetera, et cetera. And maybe even some of those Puerto Ricans or others who were thinking that maybe Trump would be better for them. She's sitting there going, reassuring, I'm normal. It's okay.
Drift Glass, same question for you here. Did Kamala Harris do what she needed to do, what she set out to do on Tuesday at the Ellipse? And did Trump do what he needed to do or set out to do on Sunday at the Garden?
Well, I think Kamala Harris's speech was excellent. And I think it's like a match set with what Michelle Obama did a couple of days before that. The two taken together are just a masterclass in how to construct a speech, how to deliver a speech, know your audience. Michelle Obama did some of the things that Kamala Harris couldn't do. She talked about the incredibly unfair standards to which Kamala Harris is being held. You can't do that when you're the presidential candidate. You certainly can't do it when you're a black woman running for president.
Well,
but Michelle Obama could do this.
You can if you're Donald Trump. He complains all the time. Right, but a Democrat cannot.
All day long.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. No, if you're a black woman Democrat running for president, you cannot actually point to the fact that it's ridiculous the amount of he's being held to no standards at all. And
right.
She's being held to impossibly high standards.
Right.
Being from Springfield, Illinois, I thought of Lincoln when I was watching Kamala Harris.
Mm.
I thought nobody can be Lincoln, but I thought of the Gettysburg Address.
Mm.
You know, the idea that, you know, this it didn't end the Civil War, but it changed the terms under which the war is being fought.
Wow.
And the venue was very carefully chosen. Lincoln went to Gettysburg to deliver his address. And, you know, there were still two more years to go on the war, but, and she went to the Ellipse to deliver her address.
Mm.
And the opening was about honoring the people who had fallen, basically defending liberty, and the bastards who had charged the Capitol, and how we have to reinvent the country and how we have to come together. And it was a very, I think, very deliberate choice of venue and style, to talk about, drawing explicit connections between what had happened here on this ground and what we need to do next.
Mm-hmm.
And who are we
as a country? I think she even said, by the people, for the people,
yes,
you know, other
did.
People. I think she used that line, yeah.
Yes.
No, it was somebody got a clever
sure.
idea and said, what we need to do is change the context of this discussion. So Lincoln took this bloody little battle over territory and turned it into something about slavery and liberty and self-government. And she talked about it doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to be like this. We can be better than this. We can be different. We can have a new generation of leadership, put all this nonsense behind us. And it was structured in a really similar way. It paid honor to the cops that got beaten up right at the top of the speech, and then talked about America and what America could be and where we need to go from here.
Hmm.
And I thought, damn, nicely done. I mean, you know, the whole idea, you know, we were oppressed by petty tyrants. We do not answer to petty tyrants. We are not going to have another petty tyrant. We're better than that. And she, as I recall, she called back to Seneca Falls and Stonewall.
Yep.
Yes.
And Normandy and Selma.
Mm-hmm.
Really
yeah.
very, very clear what she was doing there about this is our history. This is our shared history. And we're better than this. And we're going to win this thing because we know what we're fighting for.
And for Trump on Sunday?
Well, he you know, he knew the assignment and he blew it, but doesn't he always? He the idea was to get as many, you know, weirdos and scumbags out of the woodwork and have them scream and rant and jump up and down and hate. It's 2 minutes hate for 4 hours, you know, and that's exactly what they wanted. And that's exactly what they delivered. But I completely agree with Digby.
Yeah.
He let it get out of hand. He let people talk who shouldn't have ought to be talking and offending an entire voting block of hundreds of thousands of people who vote in key demographics in swing states was monumentally stupid. And so more power to him. I just say, let him talk. Keep talking, Don. Just keep running your mouth because.
Yeah. Well, and by the way, it was 6 hours, not just four.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So I have to correct you there. Sorry about that, Bill. So with all of this said, sort of a two-part question. Let me start with Heather here. One, why is this election so close? And two, is this election as close as we are being told?
The why, if it is as close as people are saying, I think says that, you know, half of the country really digs that hate fest thing. I just don't know how else. I shouldn't say half the country, but, you know, half the voters must really you know, like that. And I got to say, you know, at this point, we're all watching polls. And I mean, I've warned all my readers off of it. Just don't look. Don't pay any attention. You know, it's just it'll make you crazy and there's nothing you can do about it anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm still looking at them and reading everything and, you know, scrolling, doom scrolling every single thing.
Well, yeah,
it's my job, man. I got to do it.
I see. Okay.
But, you know, from what I can tell from some of the people that I'm looking at, I mean, first of all, you know, polling is very dicey these days for a lot of reasons. But one of the reasons is that they, you know, they make a lot, they have to make assumptions about the electorate. And I think that they have no way of knowing what this electorate really is. And largely because, and this is just me, and I've been saying this to all my friends, if you didn't read polls and you just were looking, you know, scrolling your Twitter feed or reading your Facebook or whatever you normally do, reading the paper, maybe watching a little cable, you would not believe that it was as close as the polls say that it is. And the reason for that is because you're seeing tons of Republicans come out and say they're voting for Kamala Harris.
Right.
And this is true all over media. Now, you're not seeing the opposite, right? You're not seeing a bunch of Democrats saying they're going to vote for Trump. So that's the impression that you would have. Now, whether or not that's correct, we don't know. I mean, the polls suggest something else, that maybe there's a bunch of Trump voters that we didn't know about before. And that is one of the polling assumptions that they're doing, because in the last two presidential elections, they did underestimate the Trump vote. So maybe that's what's happening again. I don't know.
That they've underestimated the Trump vote, or that they've adjusted to overestimate?
Well, they say they have adjusted to it, but, you know, maybe they've over adjusted to it.
Right.
It is possible that they've done that because, you know, look, 2020 was a weird election. I mean, nobody should compare that election to anything because of the pandemic.
Right.
And 2016, you had, you know, a candidate who was, you know, I think unreasonably disliked by a lot of people. The first woman candidate, nobody had ever seen that before. I mean, and then you had Donald Trump, the kind of jazzy celebrity, landing at, you know, state fairs in his helicopter and giving kids rides. I mean, both of them were bizarre elections. This time, we're in a completely different situation. So I'm not sure how much you can rely on it. Again, I tell everybody, pay no attention to the polls. We don't know what it means. But the vibes, if that's what we're talking about, to me, say that I think she's going to win. Well, so that's where I'm at.
Yeah, and that kind of matches up with my sort of informal polling of friends and family and so forth, who I've asked, you know, would you be surprised? They obviously they say it's so close right now, the polls, everything. But if after Election Day, Kamala Harris wins it in a landslide, would you be surprised? Most of them say no. Would you be surprised if Donald Trump wins it in a landslide? Most of them say yes, they would. So I guess if you're going on vibes, people feel, at least the people I know, I guess, seem to feel that she is winning. But you raise a good point. Driftglass, I love your thoughts on this. You know, the question is, why are there so many Trump voters at this point? Because, you know, it's Republicans, as Digby says, Republicans who are saying out loud they will not vote for Trump. They're endorsing Harris. There's so many women who are saying the same thing following the Dobbs ruling in 22. You know, so after Trump lost to Joe Biden the last time, it seems impossible to think that there would be extra more votes coming in now for Donald Trump. If so, I guess, where are they coming from? Where are all of these extra votes coming from? Or is this just a misfiguring of the polls by essentially all of the pollsters?
Well, I mean, I don't believe the polls at all.
You don't?
They're good or they're bad or they're a snapshot. I don't pay any attention to it. I try not to. Now, you know, my wife edits for Crooks and Liars, so polls creep into our conversation every day. But there are, you know, this is sadly the result of 40 years of labor on the part of conservative media and the Republican Party, and, you know, just burying these people under lies that they were happy to believe in, happy to agree with. And this is just who they are. I mean, you know, the thing that I noted, most important thing about this election is that Joe Biden is no longer a factor. So once Joe Biden, you know, people could say, well, he's old. You know, he's very old. He's very, very old.
Mm-hmm.
Once they could take him out of the equation, it's now clear that this is we are two different countries. And we're distributed in a very weird way that makes it possible for a minority of people, especially young men, young video game players who are not, who are low propensity voters, who are coming into politics for the first or second time, who just want to stick it to somebody, just want to hate somebody, might make the difference. Then again, a bunch of, you know, hacked off Puerto Rican voters in Pennsylvania might make the difference as well. Kamala Harris has run a very good campaign.
Right.
Almost flawless. You know, really. She did everything right. She did everything the centrists asked her, everything squishy Republicans asked of her. And Trump is Trump. He's a garbage pile. He's a horrible man who ran on, was running on lies and racism and threats and grievance. And it's 50-50 because half the voters have been steeping in this garbage, these lies, this nonsense. Yep. And we've been writing about this for 20 years now. You know, so it's no shock that if they're given a choice between someone who speaks like Rush Limbaugh and speaks like Sean Hannity, people who have been raised as that's their mother tongue would vote for him. And honestly, you know, we had my wife and I went out to an actual Springfield diner today for lunch. And at this Springfield diner, I had quite a moment with the gentleman behind us talking about lawfare and how Bannon's out of prison now.
Yeah.
You know, but you know who is not out of prison? Hunter Biden's not out of prison. And these are, you know, these are my neighbors.
Right.
And they're watching Jesse Waters at night.
Yep.
And they're repeating everything he says last night in conversation during the day. Multiply that by the millions of people who watch this, the millions more who listen, the millions who get it on their social media feed, who listen to nothing else. And all those Republicans who are coming out and saying, I'm voting for Kamala, doesn't matter. The minute you say that, you're a Democrat. You mean to say that you're a dirty, filthy commie traitor, and we're not going to listen to you. Then, and they've been trained to think this way. Trained for 20 years to think this
they
way.
They have been soaking in it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not surprising. It's tragic, but it's certainly not surprising.
There's another element to it, Heather. And I think it might have been, you and I might have discussed this way back in 2016 on the show, back then, I had observed that Donald Trump kind of cracked the code for how to run for president, which is simply act like you are already the president. Remember, he had motorcades. Yeah. He had his own Air Force One, a Trump Force One, they used to call it. Mm-hmm. So I can't help but feel that there is a sort of a 2024 version of that in place to act like you have already won, that you cannot be beat. Meanwhile, game the polling averages by, you know, flooding it with these right-wing pollsters, put millions into the betting markets, to make it look like he's a lock. Would you put buy him to say, look, we got to invest millions, bet on me. We got to raise the betting market, dump millions into his money-losing media company to artificially inflate that price. I mean, it feels like there may be, now, A, perhaps we're all of us here in denial. Otherwise, also a possibility is that we are all sort of, that we are watching the sort of the world's greatest gaslighting effort of all times underway. Is that possible or am I simply wish casting here, Heather?
No, it is totally possible. It is absolutely part of what's happening here. And I'm sure that Driftglass will back me up on this. Going back 20 years and watching the Republicans, Donald Trump didn't invent this thing. This has been going on for a long time. It's called the bandwagon effect. They did it in 2000. They did it in 2004. They did it in 2008. They do it every time, which is it. And this is a Karl Rove special, by the way. It was one of his big ideas. You know, you remember hit them where they're strong. Well, bandwagon effect was one of it, too. If you act like a winner, people will want to go with the winner. And you especially do it at the end of the campaign. Trump's going to do it now. He's going to go to New Mexico and some other place, Iowa or someplace that's not even in play, right? Mm-hmm. He's going to do that this week just to sort of show he's so confident that he's going to go to places where, you know, where he thinks he can pull it off. I mean, this is something they do every time. So that's not it. The fact that Trump goes around pretending like he's president, absolutely. They all call him Mr. President. Uh-huh. They all, you know, he's been running a sort of a shadow campaign down at his shadow presidency down at his Elba in Mar-a-Lago this whole time. I mean, this is, he's talking to foreign leaders. He's been on the horn with Netanyahu all the time saying, you know, hold, they just reported today. He told Netanyahu, hold off on the whole Gaza peace thing until after I'm elected, you know, mm-hmm. and of course Bibi goes, yeah, sure, bud, we'll do that. But seriously, that's just been reported. So this is what he does, of course. And he's got his motorcade and they've got all this security and everything, you know. But there's something else to this that I think is important to sort of bring up. It's something I've been talking about on my blog quite a bit. The vibe that we're talking about, what I feel in this isn't 2020 or 2016, it's 2012. And if you recall in 2012, at this point in the campaign, the election had Barack Obama winning by zero in the RCP aggregate of polls,
right.
Had him winning by 0.07%. In other words, it was tied. The Republicans totally believed they had it done.
Yeah.
Everything that we were hearing said they had it done. Fox News, basically, they were popping the champagne at this point. On election night, you may remember Karl Rove having a teeny tiny meltdown on the air when they revealed that, you know, when they called Ohio for Obama, they couldn't believe it happened. Mm-hmm. And that's because these people believe their own hype. As much as they have the bandwagon effect and as much as they, you know, believe that it's a good idea to get people on board by pretending that they're winners, they also end up believing their own hype. And so to me, this looks like 2012. I remember then, I don't know whether you guys remember how you felt then, but that last week of that campaign, as we were all following it as closely as we are now, I was going, this is BS. Obama's going to win this. What are we talking about here? Of course he's going to win. I mean, I just felt that I believe those polls. I never believed it. And I don't believe these today.
Well, I was going to say, that one never seemed close to me. This one does.
Why? And it's the same polls, Brad.
Well, because I didn't feel they were as different now. Well, I didn't feel they were as tight back then. I mean, I remember the effort by the right wing. Remember the effort to unskew the polls? There was that whole effort saying it's impossible that Barack Obama can't be beating Mitt Romney by that many points. We're going to unskew
the polls.
Look at the
polling. Look at the average. I went back and looked at them. The 538 RCP and all of them. At this point in the campaign, it was tied. Mm. According to those polls, they were absolutely assuming that they had it won. And the Democrats, you know, not the campaign, because they kind of knew what was going on. And by the way, I get the same vibe from the Harris campaign. If you saw the Jen O'Malley thing, Jen O'Malley Dillon, announcement yesterday, statement, I guess she gave on video. I don't know. The vibe I get from them is they are cautiously optimistic.
They do seem to be optimistic. I mean, they don't seem to be panicking. I know everyone else does, but they don't seem to be panicking. I got to do a quick break here. Driftglass, you want to ring in real quickly on the whether this is the world's greatest gaslighting effort of all times or not?
Well, yes. And I will say that Karl Rove swearing that they had won in a landslide and turned out to be wrong is one of the moments that the Republican base bailed, decided this, it, we're done. No more Romneys, no more Bushes.
Yep.
We got to find ourselves a Limbaugh. We got to find ourselves somebody who talks like us and acts like us. And the base felt betrayed by the Republican Party in 2012. And that led directly to 2016.
Quick break. We'll come back with our guests, our special guests here today, Heather Digby Parton and Driftglass, just days out from Election Day. Our last chance to talk to them before it's all over and done with, but maybe that's not a good turn of phrase. In any event, I'll figure out how to phrase it right after this quick break. We'll be back with them right here on the broadcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the broadcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
America, this is not a candidate for president who is thinking about how to make your life better. This is someone who is unstable, obsessed with revenge, consumed with grievance, and out for unchecked power. Donald Trump has spent a decade trying to keep the American people divided and afraid of each other. That is who he is. But America, I am here tonight to say that is not who we are.
Well, we're about to find out who we are in just a few days, as we are just days away from the election day on November 5. I can't say we're just a few days away from the election because the election is ongoing. More than 50 million Americans have already cast their votes as we go to air. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com with our special guest, Heather Digby Parton of Salon and Drift Glass of the Pro Left podcast. All right, just a couple of specific points, guys, that have come up, and then I want to sort of get your own closing message to voters, to our listeners. I think it was on Wednesday, Mike Johnson was campaigning.
House Speaker.
House Speaker, Mike Johnson. Republican House Speaker, Mike Johnson was campaigning. I think it was on Tuesday. He said that Republicans and Donald Trump plan to, quote, bring a blowtorch to federal regulations a blowtorch apparently to Obamacare as well. Here's that clip.
I mean, healthcare reform is going to be a big part of the agenda. We want to take a blowtorch to the regulatory state. And so healthcare is one of the sectors, but we need this across the board. And Trump's going to go big. And so he's going to be thinking about legacy, and we're going to fix these things.
No Obamacare?
No Obamacare.
No.
Yeah, the ACA is so deeply ingrained. We need massive reform to make this work.
Okay, no Obamacare. We're back to that old threat. Drift Glass. Heather mentioned that and you as well bringing up Puerto Rico on Sunday and calling it a floating island of garbage was a mistake for the campaign. Is that a big mistake for Mike Johnson? Say we're going to still get rid of Obamacare after it has afforded health coverage to some 50 million Americans since 2014?
Well, he lost my vote. I mean, you know,
that's
I'm
it.
Done.
That's it. Okay.
But, you know, I have this conversation with my liberal friends every now and then, with my wife every now and then, when they just bring up some incredibly outrageous thing that should be a backbreaking faux pas, a backbreaking screw up. You're going to take health care away from 50 million Americans. Republicans don't care. They don't believe it. They don't know. They don't care. You're going to take Medicare. I don't care. Social Security. I don't care. I'm not paying any attention to that. All I want is for that guy to hurt people that I don't like. So, yeah, sure, it's a mistake. In any normal, healthy society, that would be a mistake. But we aren't a normal, healthy society.
Even if they're going to lose their own health coverage that they know. That
they don't know
getting,
that.
They don't know that
they're
going
to. Not them. This isn't applied to them. They're special white people. This doesn't apply to them. This applies to other people.
Oh.
Other people are going to pay. Other people are going to pay tariffs, not me. Other people are going to lose their Medicare, not me. I'm a special, you know, God's special creature. And I'll be protected in the new regime. My goodness, haven't you been paying attention to that?
I haven't, apparently.
And I don't know that it's necessarily the case that a lot of Trump's voters actually understand what is going to happen and how it will affect them. I mean, they may not know that Obamacare, some of them may not know that. I mean, we know Media Matters did a study. They found that, you know, Harris's proposal to have Medicare cover home health care aid, which is a huge deal that has a huge impact on so many people in the United States. Media Matters found that was barely covered, maybe 30 seconds worth of coverage. So to me, it's not clear that it's known what's going on.
And in Kentucky, didn't they have to sell Obamacare as Kentucky Care or KY?
Yeah, I was going to say exactly that. A lot of people don't even know that they have Obamacare.
Right.
It's not the care part. It's the scary black man Obama part. We're trying to talk about Barack Obama. Remember how bad he was? Remember he was from Kenya, right? And he ruined your life and he destroyed America. Remember that? And she's the same. She's brown too and scary and talks like him. That's what that's about.
That said, Heather, if this if this contest is, in fact, as close as we are being told that it is, surely there are enough Republicans who understand. I mean, with 50 million now signed up via the exchanges and so forth, surely there are enough Republicans who understand that this is a threat to them as well. No? Or is it a question of will they even hear about it? Because all they're doing is watching Fox News. And I suspect Fox is not taking a lot of time to play that no Obamacare quote from Mike Johnson.
Well, I think most of them probably don't know that the threat exists. And even if they did, I mean, this is where Trump really, this is his superpower, is his ability to just say anything. And people just, you know, cherry pick what they want to believe out of what he says. They may very well think, oh, he's just saying that. They're not really going to do that. I mean, that has been, part and parcel of his sort of appeal to people from the very beginning, was it that he gets away with that Trump, that's part of it. Oh, he's just saying that, that kind of thing. Come on. From people who are semi-sane, and then other people who just believe everything that he says and thinks it's terrific no matter what it is. So I don't know. I mean, this is kind of new. Trump is sort of skirted around the edges of this Obamacare thing. They talked about it in the debate a little bit, and he got caught up. That's the whole, well, I have a concept of a plan thing that kind of hung him up.
Right.
But it turns out Mike Johnson has a plan. So, I think that it would be really nice if we could get that out there. And it just to hit some of those Republican voters, or some of any voters who might have half a brain and be concerned about their own material well-being. Because honestly, look at the economy right now and the numbers that come down. We just had another huge, great economic report today. It's been, gas prices are down. I mean, things have never been better. And Trump's out there saying, well, it's all because they're anticipating my return to office. That's why the markets are going, and all of that. So, I mean, what are you going to do with these people? I mean, I don't want to get too cynical.
Don't ask.
But my God, what are we going to do?
Well,
what are we going to do?
Also the Trump, and I don't know if this was on Sunday night or another rally, but Trump claimed that he and Speaker Mike Johnson, quote,
have
a little secret to ensure that they win. New York Times reported the Democrats are, quote, panicked about that. But of course, panicking Democrats is always pretty easy.
Whatever.
Bill, do you have any real, either of you have any real idea what the hell he's talking about? Or is this just, again, another gaslighting and is actually designed to hoax Dems into panic?
Oh, I think there's going to be a whole lot of shenanigans at polling places. And there's going to be a whole lot of voting challenges. And there's going to be a whole lot of angry people. And there's going to be a whole lot of just a staggering amount of garbage flooding social media about voting, where voting's been canceled, voting the date's been changed. Just a tidal wave of that stuff. Plus armed people. I mean, I expect MAGA types to show up strapped to polling places.
They had some young boys down in Florida, teenagers, show up yesterday and waving around a machete at some older voters who were standing in line to early vote. So, yeah, bros. Yeah, bros. That's the guys we're looking for.
I completely expect that. I this election is not going to be over once the votes are counted. This election will be over in January when hopefully Madam President is sworn in as the President of the United States. And that was the part of her speech that I just think was BS, which was, I just want to sit down with these people, hands across the aisle, and work with them. Like, I believe that she wants everyone to have good health care and good education, clean air, and help with their seniors and help with their kids. I totally believe that. I think she's nuts if she thinks she can sit down with any of these people and achieve anything. That was what killed the Obama administration. Is this delusion that they were going to work with you to do anything.
A grand bargain.
Yeah.
And the further to the center you tack, the further to the right they go. And that's where Digby said something about cracking the code on running for president. Trump also cracked the code on the media.
Yep.
He figured them out real quick, which is no matter how far nutso I go, they'll always find the midpoint and they'll always say it's both sides and they'll always wonder why Kamala Harris is doing blah, blah, blah. And they're still doing it.
Has it bothered, and I have to get to, I want to get to your closing messages for voters, but very quickly, has it bothered you that Kamala Harris has spent so much time with, you know, Liz Cheney and trying to appeal to Republicans and so forth during the campaign?
If you're asking me, I know it bothers him. No. Of course it does.
Okay.
But we don't need to ask that of Driftglass.
Oh, okay.
But me, I'm not bothered by it because I just think that they're just looking at straight numbers. They're trying to eke out whatever votes they can. And I think it's just purely a straight up campaign decision. And as to whether or not she actually, I don't think she's inviting Liz into the cabinet. I'd be a little surprised by that. But I could see her inviting Adam Kinzinger to be the VA secretary or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Just as a gesture. But I haven't really heard a lot from me. And I totally get you, Drifty, on this, that, you know, I have the same, you know, kind of chill go up my spine when I hear that kind of thing and kind of go, uh-oh, here we go.
Look, you got to win elections. You got to win elections.
With a broad
coalition.
I haven't
heard her make any big policy promises in that regard. I haven't seen a lot of drift that direction. So I'm not as concerned. I'm calling those people Harris Republicans. I wrote it in my piece today for Salon. They're called Harris Republicans. And just like Ronald Reagan, he didn't pay any attention to those Democrats.
Right.
They either got on board or he didn't care. And that's what she needs to do, too. And I think she will.
And I think she framed one thing. I noticed this in her speech, talking about, once Congress gives me that bill, I will sign it. I will work with Congress to do, just setting it up. It's like, you know what? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get in there with a magic marker and pretend that Roe v. Wade has now been returned.
Yeah.
This is
a
Congress thing. You got to give me a Congress who will work with me. That's part of your responsibility, too.
And I think that that's the thing that we should point out as well, that that there needs to be a Congress, a Democratic majority Congress and a Democratic majority Senate, not just to get those things done, but to ensure that the Electoral College vote works on January 6th. Because one of the things that Ellie Misdahl in The Nation wrote today is that he believes that the secret is that Johnson, who will be in power still, plans to use delay to reduce the number of Electoral College votes to lower the majority, the margin that Trump needs to win.
That's their little secret.
Yeah,
as
that's
Ms.
what
Dahl
Ellie
Misdahl
thinks.
Well,
I don't get that, to be honest, because I thought the Electoral Count Reform Act that they just passed,
it would not be covered by that.
I thought that they did change it so that whatever it would be, you know, that the electoral count had to be whatever a majority of whatever votes there were. So if there were no votes, that it would, if they didn't get Nevada, say, you know, whatever, and it was reduced, they still had to get a majority of whatever votes there were. I could be wrong about that, but I was surprised to read that from Ellie, because I didn't,
I think they're leaning on we don't have time to talk about it, but the 12th Amendment, which, would lower the number that would be needed to win the majority of the Electoral College.
And I think they're also thinking that Mike Johnson might, you know, he's a constitutional scholar. I don't know if you knew that, he might be, putting together some way of actually challenging the Electoral Count Act and the Electoral Count Reform Act before the Supreme Court. But they might try to do that.
As everyone knows, and I think the message is out that this thing is not over by a long shot, unfortunately, on Tuesday, November 5. This could go on for a while. Guys, I got to get out, and I've got about 30 seconds or so for each of you on your closing message. You're talking to a lot of our voters, by the way, of all stripes, from the far left who would like to vote for Jill Stein or like to stay home, or on the far right who would like to vote for Donald Trump. Let me sort of go through each of you very quickly, about 30 seconds or so each. Let's start with you, Digby.
Okay. Quickly, I think most of the people who are listening to this show are voting. You don't listen to a political show like this unless you're actually going to vote. Now, there may be people who are kind of not wanting to, you know, over Gaza and various other things. And I would just encourage them to actually do it. Hold your nose. Vote for Kamala Harris, because Donald Trump is on the horn with Bibi Netanyahu every day. And as a result, I think that means that it's not good news for the Palestinian people. And I would just say, you know, just do what you have to do. We have more influence over the Harris administration than you ever would over Donald Trump. And there are people there who will back you up on that. That will be part of the Democratic administration. So vote, vote, vote.
Sort of echoing AOC, who said the same thing. She'd rather organize against the Democratic administration than against the Trump administration. Yes. Bill Driftglass, your thoughts on the way out?
I want to borrow from a better speaker than me and say the patriots at Normandy, Selma, Seneca Falls, and Stonewall, they did not sacrifice only to see us cede our freedoms and submit to the will of another petty tyrant.
Very moving. Who said that, Bill?
Some I don't know, chick who thinks she's black. I'm not sure if she's white.
Some lady I heard somewhere said that.
I heard she was the Antichrist. Des, do you want to make a closing argument or not? You don't have to.
I just want to jump in and say that it is not partisan to say that voting or not voting in a way that allows Trump to regain power means likely an end to U.S. climate policy, and you know, that will also change how the rest of the world reacts to climate policy.
What a partisan. All right. I want to thank both of you guys, not just for joining us today, but for joining us repeatedly over and over again. Thank you so much over this past year to try to make sense of this election, to make sense of phase one of this election. Thank you so much for that. Heather Digby Parton, of course, can be found every day at salon.com and at her own blog, digbysblog.net, as well as on the site still known as Twitter at digby56. You can and you should download Driftglass's. There is something like that. His podcast that he does with Fran Blue Gal. You might know her from over at Crooks and Liars. You can download it anytime at proleftpod.com. Boy, you think I'd be better at this after a year of having you guys on. Mm-hmm. You can also find his blog at driftglass.blogspot.com and on the Twitters at Mr_Electrico. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. See you on the other side.
We'll talk to you on the other side. Thanks as well to our producer, Desi Doyen. Yep. Thanks, Des. And thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any part of today's show, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. It is free. Thanks to you, because you help us stay on your public airwaves by hitting one of those donate buttons or going straight to bradblog.com/donate. We rely on you to do everything that we do here. Thank you for your support in advance. You can drop me an email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter, I am the Brad Blog. We will see you there until we see you here next time. Hopefully tomorrow. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world. You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported thanks to listeners like you who stop by bradblog.com/donate.